Good evening from Planet Waves. I'm Eric Francis Coppolino, your friendly neighborhood astrologer, author of the Planet Waves Horoscope, which is off for the last week. I'll be back next week with the August monthly edition that is underway and coming out beautifully. Today's StarCast accompanies the Thursday, July 30th, Planet Waves, written by Liz Shepard. Thanks for joining me. Today is Thursday. It is the day after the full moon. Full moon was 10:35 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time on Wednesday. And as you may know, this full moon traced, that is to say, the moon was full conjunct Pluto and the sun was conjunct Jupiter. So it traced the Jupiter-Pluto opposition. That was the big whoop-de-doo that was exact on the 20th. I have described that underneath that opposition of Jupiter and Pluto is another planet, a hypothetical planet called Vulcanus, which is adding some extra energy, a lot of extra energy, to the equation, and then conjunct Pluto is the relationship-oriented asteroid Juno. So there's more to the picture here. And then, of course, this is all rather supported by Neptune and Uranus and Aries and Gemini. So it's a big aspect pattern. That was the basket pattern. And there's a lot of layers to this pattern, but I think that the important thing to focus on for the moment and do a little review is that there was this full moon that activated the Jupiter-Pluto opposition. And when you get a lunation activating an aspect like that, there can be a precipitation effect, like it was finally, you know, whatever, humid enough or warm and cool enough to rain. And what I had suggested was that we were going to see some effects of this, of the Jupiter-Pluto opposition kind of instigated by the full moon. So looking back at Wednesday, it happened to be a very eventful day. I think that the most noteworthy thing that happened was that there was a crash in the South Korean stock market, the Kospi market, which plunged more than 33% throughout July with a big close on Thursday. So it wasn't that it all crashed on Wednesday, sorry, the day of the full moon, but rather all through the month of July, it has been declining and is down now 33%, more than the 1997 IMF crisis, where it lost 27%, and the October 2008 financial crisis, where it lost 23%. Now, this market was largely propped up by AI stocks, and there is a financial crisis brewing. Anyone can see it. These AI companies are way overvalued. Nobody is making money on AI. The expenditures are tremendous. They are losing money for every subscriber that they gain. Nobody really wants to subscribe to this shit. The corporations that have incorporated it into their work are realizing that actual human beings doing the work is better and cheaper. Go figure. That this was all just a kind of a fad or an operation that was, by which I mean, I mean to avoid the overused word psyop. It's not really a psychological operation. This was more of a overall maneuver. Another big financial maneuver. The last huge one was in 2020. It was only, you know, a little less than 3 years later. This was the bailout of the repo market that the claim of a pandemic in 2020 concealed massive financial movement of trillions of dollars and essentially reliquidating the economy through all of those bailouts and loans and everything like this, the SBA loans and the PPP loans and all this stuff. And now there's this other massive trend of investment in AI companies, the ones that are traded publicly and the ones that are not traded publicly, for example, like Anthropic and OpenAI. Those are not on the stock market yet. They are racing to get on the stock market to spread out the loss to private investors, like basically to stockholders. They don't really have stockholders right now. They've got bondholders. Anyway, the Korean stock market, not necessarily the indicator of the world, but this is important news, and it is not. I heard about it from watching Casey Simpson's channel, my current favorite young journalist, who called it out yesterday. He had the story yesterday afternoon of what was going on, and there's a problem here, and a large part of the problem is that so many investment funds jumped in feet first into this AI thing, and some of them are 40% invested in these worthless AI companies. It's like the subprime mortgage crisis all over again, except that the things that have been invested in, like, don't have a roof. There's nothing. They're worthless. There's nothing you can do with a half-built data center or a warehouse full of $30,000 N100 computer chips. Anyway, that was yesterday. And then we had the privilege, those of you who watched or watched the YouTube, and I will be covering this in detail on a forthcoming Planet Waves FM. Tony Fauci was called before Congress by Rand Paul. I forget exactly which committee. And called before the Senate investigation into the origins of COVID. Now, take that with a grain of salt. They're working within the various narrative frameworks here that there was a pandemic and there was a virus, and maybe the virus was a wild origin, and maybe the virus was a lab leak. And by the way, all of this was being kind of litigated in the medical press in January 2020. Never broke the surface of the mainstream press until well after 2020 was long over. Anyway, Fauci was called to testify and read a brief opening statement about what a wonderful person he is. And then he sat there for 3 hours, and every single time he was asked a question by one of the senators, he pleaded the Fifth Amendment. He said that the exact quote he said 111 times. I've made a kind of a meme out of it. On the advice of counsel, I respectfully decline to answer based upon my rights under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. He wouldn't even answer the question what the Fifth Amendment was, what it said, who wrote it, nothing. Do you have a red folder on your desk? Nothing. I plead the Fifth. The Fifth Amendment is what you plead when you would incriminate yourself by saying something. Now, Fauci has incredibly been pre-pardoned by Biden, on Biden's way out of office. You think that all of these Trump pardons are horrible, and like, who is he protecting? Well, why did Biden have to issue a sweeping pardon of Fauci for all of his actions back to 2014? Yes, everything back to 2014. And he still wouldn't answer the questions. The reason he wouldn't answer the questions is that the pardon does not cover any crimes committed after the pardon. And one of those crimes would be contempt of Congress or perjury if he was lying to Congress. So this also is happening right in the wake of the full moon. Over, I didn't see it live. I rewatched a bunch of the video, which I will include with the Planet Waves FM, where I do some analysis of this and the whole scenario with the lab leak versus the wild origin versus Fauci's involvement in the pre-planning of events, which was revealed in October of 2019. All you need to do is look up on C-SPAN. I'll link to that as well. Probably the greatest ever Planet Waves FM had all of Fauci's quotes and a bunch of other flu magnates involved in a hiding in plain sight, wide open planning of what was going to happen in 2020, just 4 or 5 months later. I'm going to replay some of those quotes for you. And so Fauci is being questioned about whether he was involved in gain-of-function research and whether he thought that there was a good or a bad idea to, you know, create juiced-up viruses that could spread through the air and all this stuff. Well, that's a bunch of bullshit. What Fauci knew sitting there, which no one else knew, was that he was part of the premeditation of the whole thing. I mean, that would certainly have been an interesting line of questioning. And I'd be happy to share. Well, I don't know if this is the place to do it, but I will have it on Planet Waves FM. I will play the quotes by Fauci and other big flu vaccine magnates. There's a whole flu vaccine industry. And one of the things that was going on, along with a big bailout of the repo market and the Bank of International Settlements involved in this huge bank in Switzerland, the bank of all central bank of all central banks, you might say, was that they were going to roll out this mRNA technology and force people, billions of people, to get these injections as a business plan to make the flu scarier, as Fauci said. We've got to make the flu scarier. Scary as cancer or AIDS. People don't worry about the flu. They get better. We've got to make it scary, like cancer or AIDS. Mm-hmm. So this is what's lurking in the background. Meanwhile, it was quite dramatic to see him sitting there with this, I don't even have words to describe the expression on his face, but it was an expression of complete despondency and defeat after his alleged 50-year stellar career. And sitting there over and over again pleading the Fifth Amendment to avoid criminal prosecution for his actions or, well, for lying about his actions. This was high drama. And this is going on exactly during the full moon. The full moon, he starts his testimony at about 8:30 in the morning, goes for 3 hours. The full moon was at 10:35, right smack in the middle of this testimony. Quite incredible. All right. Meanwhile, yesterday, massive upsurge in the War of Hormuz. That's my name for it. I'm calling it the War of Hormuz. And if we go right to the New York Times now, as of 9:08 a.m., well, now we switch to an inflation narrative on the front as the top left story on the front. The story for the last 24 hours has been Mideast teeters on the brink of an expanded war as Iran and U.S. resume attacks, except that Iran has seemingly unlimited supply of drones, probably being supplied by China, and is now able to use drone warfare against America's, you know, allies, you know, United States and Israeli allies, meaning like oil trading partners in the Middle East. Meanwhile, also, Iran has spread these attacks out into the Red Sea, blocking Saudi's ability to go around the Gulf of Hormuz, Strait of Hormuz. And We're not even hearing much about the choking off of fertilizer. Something like a quarter of the world's fertilizer comes through the Strait of Hormuz, which is used by, you know, farmers all over the world to feed everything. It provides fertilizer for plants. It provides fertilizer for hay, which is used to feed cows. And so there are all of these different converging effects. You know, fortunately, the most outrageous stages of the astrology are behind us. We have the Uranus era, the Eris Chiron conjunction. You know, there are no more exact contacts of that, but it doesn't mean that they will not continue to have precipitating effects going on for years. And I think it's interesting to note and important to note that fairly soon I've got one of these old laptops open, my good old laptop from 2018, that we are approaching the next major massive aspect is Saturn conjunct Eris. And that's not happening tomorrow. It's happening in June of 2027. It's a little less than 2 years away, but it is approaching. And, you know, apart from that, there are not that many square type, like, you know, fourth harmonic type aspects. But we have is this transiting pattern of Pluto, Neptune, and Uranus that is still all within 1 degree in mid-2027, incredibly. So we have all three of the so-called modern planets. These were the modern planets before I, you know, officially blew my bugle and recognized Chiron and Eris as modern planets. But in astrology, technically, the modern planets are the ones that were discovered by science, starting with Uranus in 1781 or something, and then Neptune in 1846 or something, Pluto in 1930 or something. And so those were the outer planets or modern planets. Now we've got Chiron and Eris being part of that. But the original three outer planets, they are going to be holding this double yod pattern. It's a double yod because anytime you put two slow movers in a 60-degree angle, what they point to, even if there's nothing there yet, something either comes through there, passes through the neighborhood, or it is in your natal chart, right? So, for example, right now, anyone with something in early Virgo is picking up the official original yod pattern, which is the like perpetual sextile of Pluto and Neptune, because they're moving at very similar speeds now. You know, basically you have Pluto still very close to Neptune's orbit. Perihelion was in the 80s sometime, but that's Pluto's got a 248 year orbit. That's not that long ago in the scale of a 248 year orbit. And so then we've got the Neptune Uranus yod, and that means that whatever is in early Scorpio, early like 7 degrees of Scorpio, is picking up the energy of that. It's like if you check any of my recent videos, you'll see what I mean by a yod pattern. And in the next video that I do, I will draw for you the double yod, so you can see what this is the product of having all of these sextiles in the sky right now. So again, just to sum up, in reality, in the real world, doing a little bit of review, the thing that astrology does not like to do, astrology thinks it's South Park. Kenny dies 1 week and then he's back live the next week. It took me a while to get that joke, that it's mocking this episodic concept of TV shows where whatever happens one week doesn't never mention it didn't non-existent, you know, the following week, you know, Ricky, Nikki, Dickie, and Dawn, you know, one week they all lose their hair, and then the next week their hair is mysteriously back, like they never lost it, they never make a reference to it. South Park mocks this, but one of the ways they mock it is, you know, Kenny dies like 75 times. And he comes back to life. Well, people treat astrology like it's some kind of a serial where it just goes from episode to episode instead of being a sequence. So serialized as things go in sequence, like Twin Peaks. But when it's episodic, what happens one week kind of unhappens the next week, and then something new happens, and then something new happens. And so what's always amused me about astrology is that, like, people just forget, you know, like, you know, 2 weeks ago, the Barbo basket, and there is no such thing. Barbo never said the words Barbo basket, but what do you want? The Barbo basket is the big deal. One week, you know, July and January. Isn't that funny? January 14th, it's getting billions of hits, and then it's completely forgotten about, you know, a week after it happens. And of course, the full moon is involved. It was very close. Okay, so I think I've made all those points. You probably realize this. I go slowly in these presentations, and I repeat myself. It is not easy to follow this, and in some ways, it is much better in video format because you can see what I'm looking at. But I like the vibe of audio better. I have less to think about. I don't have to worry about camera angle and this. Like, it, when you remove all the photography and then the second camera also, it's like a lot easier. So I would encourage you, if you're curious and want to, you know, follow and really learn about the things I'm saying, toggle back and forth between the audio and the video formats. And of course, we have, Liz and I have, I contributed some to today's article, done, I think, a formidable job of putting this in writing as well. Before I get into the coming eclipses, I want to just make a little pitch for why I think astrology is more relevant now than ever. One of the things we're dealing with is profound incohesion. The world seems to be completely fragmented. It's like somebody dropped a huge mirror in the middle of the street, and we're looking at the life of the city reflected in a big broken mirror, even as cars drive over the pieces and scatter them around and break them into even smaller pieces. That is an effect of the electrical environment, but more specifically, an effect of the digital environment. This is why people spend hours and hours scrolling on their fucking phones. Please don't do that. It is such a ridiculous, not only waste of time and waste of mental energy, it is like ingesting brain damage. It's like, it's just brain damage. But people do it. They do it a lot. They seem to just kind of just drift off and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. Well, this is an example of fragmentation. This is even worse than episodic presentations. I mean, the one thing I like about it, and I will tell you that I do a little bit of scrolling on a computer. I've got a computer across the room with Facebook on it. And so sometimes I'll get caught on the Reels thing. But what's fun about it, and it's fun for like about 10 minutes, is that you never know what's going to come up next. And it has this dreamlike quality. If you're paying attention while you're watching, and again, like, I don't think any of this stuff is really good for a phone. I mean, it's crazy that the cameras are all 4K, and now you can get 8K, and then everyone's watching on a screen that's 6 inches, right? Except for the couple of wacky people who were on, like, their surround, on their surround screens. Anyway, the fragmentation issue. Everything is like looking at life in a broken mirror. This is an effect of digital consciousness. The effect of digital consciousness is being induced as if by a drug by exposure to digital conditions. Life is inchoate, incoherent, fragmented, discontinuous. What astrology gives us is this endless, connected set of patterns, and even though the patterns change in a kind of a kaleidoscopic way, it is the same basic cycles that are moving along through the years. As, for example, you know, Pluto goes through the signs. When I started astrology, Pluto was in the end of Scorpio. Now Pluto's at the beginning of Aquarius. Well, this has just been going on and on forever. And I've lived and done astrology long enough to see the Saturn-Pluto cycle go through major shifts. I've seen the Uranus-Pluto cycle go through a series of shifts. I've, you know, any astrologer practicing for a period of decades who is paying attention to the outer planet transits. But even if you're not, the transits go on. The cycles keep cycling. And tuning into astrology is tuning into cohesion. I realize it seems like there's a lot of things to look at, especially the way that I do charts sometimes, unless I take out everything and just leave in three planets, or stick in 50. The cohesive quality of astrology, I think, is its most valuable asset right now. Now, you're not going to get this from all astrologers who are not working with the holistic principle as a conscious thing, right? That there are astrologers working holistically who see the interconnections, and there are astrologers who are not working so cohesively, holistically. Focusing on Chiron focuses the holistic principle. You've got to start somewhere. We have a nice new young Chiron cycle. Chiron only a month or so into Taurus. This is going to be a very interesting story as Chiron moves through Taurus. And as with the study of history, you can jump in anywhere with astrology. You can follow the lunar cycles, the solar lunar cycles, that too. Like, this is like astrology on the level of gardening, where you follow the sun through the signs, you follow the seasons changing. You know, when you get to the midpoint of the season, that's called the cross quarter. You're following the new moon, you follow the full moon, you can see those things in the sky, and you know, your garden kind of comes along for the ride, right? If you have a garden. If you don't have a garden, no, get a couple of houseplants. So this is why I think astrology is very important right now. And the approach to astrology of looking at it as a cohesive process, where the thing that you do is you study the patterns. So this is why, by the way, my videos are so focused on tracing and delineating aspect patterns. We have one, by the way, there's a big one today, that'll get into the eclipses. A very important one, quick moving, but nonetheless a truly significant one, which I cover in my full moon video. That was on Tuesday. And this is Venus square Mars. And not only is it Venus square Mars, it's Venus in Virgo square Mars in Gemini. So we got Venus square Mars in the Mercury-ruled signs. Mercury is now in Cancer. newly out of Mercury retrograde, still in shadow form. So Mercury is carrying the quality of Venus and Mars, but also Venus is exactly opposite Nessus. It is exactly, as of 2 hours from when I'm recording at about 9:30 in the morning, and the Venus Nessus opposition is at 11:24 a.m. So exactly 2 hours from now, and then it is still in a 1 degree partile, very close square to Mars. Okay, so this is about sexual power dynamics. You know, it's funny. All we talk about with sex is like porno, OnlyFans, and why people are fucking less. Right? Is there any other conversation, any conversation of communication or desire or fulfillment, or is it just one, you know, one big kind of economic discussion? Well, I think it's I think that there has never been less meaningful discussion about sex, and I don't mean, you know, trans. I don't mean queer politics. I don't mean body positivity. Those are all wonderful things, and maybe in some way precursors, but I don't know. If they were precursors, then we would be pretty precursed right now, and we would be able to have the more honest level of the conversation. So the honest conversation about sex today on Thursday, July 30th, would be a conversation about trust. It would be a conversation about the difference between sex that is explored on the pleasure principle versus sex that is explored or used or weaponized, as the overused word goes, on the power principle. In our times now, especially under electrical and digital conditions, where sex is so commodified and so politicized, everything is about power, and it would seem to me that people are just afraid to admit basic attraction, to have a warm conversation. You could say that, especially young people, it's absolutely incredible that you know, sex and masturbation, baby making, marriage, and all this cohab, all these are at all time lows under this Gen Z generation, which is the first generation of digital natives. That's what Gen Z, when you hear the term Gen Z, you think these are the people who maybe they knew what a TV set was. Some people still do know what a TV set, especially if their mom and dad bring them to the Museum of TV Sets in Washington, D.C., and they can see, wow, that's a TV set. How about that? They don't just think that all are iPads. And so, yeah, Gen Zs, that is to say digital natives, know what a TV was, but they pretty much were only exposed to digital television and computing devices and computers in school, and a lot were, you know, given iPads at very young ages. And, you know, I'm always inquiring people if they remember a telephone hung on the wall that rang, and was there an actual bell or was it an electronic bell? Well, Gen Zs are going to be the first generation where some of them don't know about a telephone hanging on the wall. They are digital natives. They have been steeped. The society was completely soaked in digital technology. We're now coming up on the 25th anniversary of 9/11. In my view, it was basically late 2000. Really, I'll do a presentation on three charts that led to what I call full digital conditions. Y2K, that is to say, New Year's Eve from 1999 to 2000, the election of 2000, the crazy stolen election of 2000, and the 9/11 incident. That was the trifecta of incidents that led us to what I call full digital conditions, when the digital age was fully in place and irrevocable, and nobody could tell anymore what was real and what was not. And all of your Gen Zs, pretty much, yeah, they were, I guess they count some born like in 1999, but everybody who is under the age of 25 or 26 He's born right into this full digital conditions vortex. All right, brief mention of eclipses. I'll be doing a presentation on this. I've got this up on Serenu under the Eclipse Finder. Well worth getting a subscription to Serenu. You've got a lot of subscriptions. And it's good free services. And if you need something, I'll look it up for you. But I can also teach you how to use the website. It's one of the best astrology. It's like the best planetary calculation websites in existence. A big part of the site is free. Solar eclipse total, August 12th. That is in a mere 13 days. That is to say, the next new moon, we've just had the last full moon outside the eclipse phase. That was the Aquarius full moon. The new moon in Leo of August 12th is a total solar eclipse. That is very close to the total solar eclipse of August 11th, 1999. It's a different Saros cycle. It's not in the same degree, but nonetheless, that was a major eclipse heralding the beginning of full digital conditions. That, again, was the summer of 1999 with the Cassini space probe. Remember that? The Cassini space probe with 72 pounds of plutonium that was going to be... was in fact slingshotted around Venus, then back to the Earth, and then sent out to Jupiter, slingshot maneuver around Jupiter, and then parked in an orbit of Saturn for many years. That was the summer the Cassini space probe flew by, 1999. Anyway, this is a total eclipse. I'll be interpreting that in next week's monthly horoscope. And we will have full coverage of that. This is going to be followed by a partial lunar eclipse, which is the moon in Pisces and the sun in Virgo on the 28th of August. Sorry. Yes, 28th of August. So we are now officially entering eclipse season. And as ever, Planet Waves will have full coverage. We do a fine job covering eclipses. I was right from the beginning of my astrology career very excited about eclipses. All right, that is what I've got for you for today. I am for Starcast. I am planning Planet Waves FM for Sunday night, where I'm going to look at the Fauci testimony in detail as one who has covered the quote-unquote COVID crisis every day since before it started, and the situation with the Korean stock market and the economics of these GPT large language model companies. All right, signing off from the 1890 Harshaw House in wet, cool, lovely Greene County, New York. Lots of love. And bye for now.